Oh, that's a good question. Like, does he resent everything being a gate now? Yes. Was that the first gate?
Yeah.
Because it was called...
Of course it was the first. Okay. Yeah, it's a water gate.
Hello, Jews and all others who voted. This is Unorthodox, a weekly podcast from Tablet Magazine. I am Mark Oppenheimer, joined as ever by Deputy Editor Stephanie Butnick.
Hello.
Hello. And Senior Writer Liel Leibowitz.
May the Lord help us.
May the Lord help us. A special episode of Unorthodox today. You will notice that this is not a Thursday, that this episode is actually dropping on a Tuesday because we wanted to come to you on Election Day. So those of you who listen as soon as the episode auto-downloads are listening on your way to the polling places on this Tuesday. Those of you who are listening later in the week, you know something that we don't.
As Tom Brady calls it, Super Tuesday?
Super Tuesday. What does Gazella call it? Gazella. Are they still together, Tom and Gazella?
You know that's not how you say her name, right?
Giselle.
So I saw them at Hamilton.
I know now.
They were at Hamilton the night that I was there.
And it's funny because... stage.
No, because it was during his suspension. So it was like he had time to go to Hamilton.
I'm not throwing away my shot because I'm going to deflate my balls.
Anyway, for our special election coverage on this Tuesday, November 8th, we are welcoming... This is entirely new. This is like we're breaking all the rules here today. We're welcoming three Jews and a Gentile. We are welcoming Jamie Kirchick, author, political commentator, reporter. We are welcoming Jew Eliana Johnson, author, political commentator, reporter. We are welcoming Jew Grandpa Rothhaus, Stephanie Butnick's
Grandpa Al
from Boca Raton.
Holding the fort in the great state of Florida.
Literally holding the fort down.
Who is actually voting today in Florida.
They've already voted.
Oh, there's early voting?
They early voted like last week.
We'll ask him about it.
And he's an elderly liberal Jew from Florida. So we're going to talk to him about what it's like to be... a Democrat
in the shadow of Mar-a-Lago.
I mean, he's not that elderly. He's pretty, like, he's spry.
He's neither that elderly nor that liberal, but
no, he's pretty liberal.
So we're going to talk to Grandpa Al, and then we're going to talk to a Gentile you may have heard of, just a little somebody called Bob Woodward, just a guy who took down a president, you know, low those many years ago. There may be more presidents to take down by the time.
Are we going to ask if he can do it again?
We're going to ask if he can do it again. So we're going to get to all of those super guests in just a minute. Before we do, just a big extra thank you. Last week's episode, as you know, came to you live from Hebrew College outside Boston. I just wanted to say again that Hebrew College is not only an amazing place, and I should say, full disclosure, I've given some talks there and I've met those people and feel like I know them. Interfaith, pluralist, not interfaith, but interdenominational pluralist, every branch of Judaism represented there. Just a really, really special place for learning. And they threw a great party.
It was really fun.
It was off the hook. So so thanks to Hebrew College. And we, you know, we're not going to do a lot of news of the Jews today because I feel like there's one big news item.
That the world ended?
That by the time you hear this, you're voting on whether or not
be gone.
A sort of truncated.
Trumpcated.
NOTJ, News of the Jews. Item one, we just a big shout out to Daniel Eliff, the fifth generation Clevelander and Orthodox Jew, who got to throw out the first pitch in World Series Game 7. He won that right at an auction. So big mazels to Daniel Eliff. No mazels at all to Lena Dunham, who did this incredibly weird pro-Hillary. Did you guys watch her music video? Her pro-Hillary
no.
MC. You'd be shocked to learn that I did not.
So she did this video, you know, thinking back to Pharrell's video for Obama, I think, 8 years ago, she did this thing in her persona of MC pantsuit, where she did a hip-hop rap that was pro-Hillary. And honestly, I almost wanted to vote Trump by the end
of it. Just the apocalypse, just come
no,
and
I
deliver
mean, typically
us.
On Team Lena, I want to say.
Are
but
you?
Sometime, well, yes.
Habitually, I mean, not in this case.
Yes, I mean, I haven't.
Say
to be
you support
I didn't
her.
Even watch
you support
it,
her
is...
in her recent statement that the world would be better if all heterosexual white men died.
Did she say that?
Yes, she did on Twitter. But that's, you know,
not
neither
like a
here
painful
nor there.
Death.
No, a slow, you know, pantsuit death.
A sort of Belgian euthanasia death.
That's exactly
as,
right.
As it were. What was so sad about it was, of course, the great, like, white Jewish hip-hop rap of all time was Natalie Portman's rap on Saturday Night Live.
That was amazing.
Which is just brilliant. And just, Liel, I know you're not on Team Portman, but it was really...
How are you not on any...
Blood pressure
the
is
woman,
rising
But
right
the
now.
Woman really carried off sort of ironic self-parody hip-hop well in that. And here's Lena Dunham, who's actually... Here's the thing. She's a great persona and a decent writer, but she's not a great actress as anything but herself. And so you
I think
put
she's
her...
more than I think you got, you are really selling her short. I think she's a very good writer. Like, I think to call her a decent writer is
You're right. Her skill is that she's
I think that to
she's
call her a
writer.
Writer at all is an offense to anyone who's ever written.
Anyway, the writer of our generation.
Anyway, if you want to stay enthusiastic about voting for Hillary, don't go watch Lena Dunham's pro Hillary video. And finally, in news of the people good for the Jews and not
Instead,
good for the
watch,
Jews.
Watch drumroll. A new movie by
Mel Gibson. Mel Gibson. There we go. Leo, you predicted our third item today. Mel Gibson has a new movie out.
It's not a week without Mel.
What's it called again?
Hacksaw Ridge.
And it's...
In a world in which the Jews control the media and the banks, one man. Yeah.
So, two little bits of news here. First of all, the star of this movie is, what's his name?
Andrew Garfield.
Garfield. Garfinkel? Garfield?
Garfield.
Garfield, which means it was once Garfinkel. From The Social Network.
And Spider-Man.
If you say
and
so.
And formerly dating Emma Stone.
Watson?
Stone.
Emma
Stone.
Stone.
Yeah.
If you say so. And he said, like, oh, Mel was cool. Like, I'm a proud Jew, but we worked
well, no,
well together.
You have to set this up. He was on Jimmy Kimmel. And Jimmy Kimmel was like, he said to Andrew Garfield, so working with Mel Gibson, like, so you're Jewish. Was that weird? Like, literally, that was the question. And Andrew goes, proud. I'm Jewish and proud, basically. Like, and he's like, yeah, he was a fine guy. Like, it didn't really come up. But it was like so funny that you only like, now have to answer for working with Mel Gibson.
Mel needs to be five drinks in before he reveals his true colors. When he's sort of in director
I can
mode.
There is no guest I would rather have on the show
than
more
Mel
than
Gibson.
Mel Gibson.
So the other thing.
I feel the two of us would have a very special thing going on.
Mel Gibson's doing that thing again where he has a new movie to promote and he keeps talking about that thing that happened 8 years ago or whatever it
Which
was,
we're going to play a little clip of.
In case you don't remember.
He was pulled over on suspicion of driving under the influence and he got out of the car and shouted, fucking
Jews. And to Officer Me, are you a Jew? And the Jews are responsible for all the wars in the world.
I'm ashamed of that. That came out of my mouth. And I'm not that. That's not who I am. You know?
And he says...
It's like the first thing he says.
It's like, I'm over it. I'm sober.
Why
like,
do you
that
still
was
bring
dark
it up?
Time.
It's like,
why is everyone
I,
talking
I,
about
I
it?
I didn't. You just did.
But right. Every time he brings up like a new detail. So this one was, you know, I was eight double tequilas in. And you're like, what?
So
it's like, stop talking about it.
He literally can't stop talking about it. The question, of course, in the season of Atonement is, did he ever call, who was it he called sugar tits? Was it the officer?
At the police station, still angry, he said to a female sergeant, what do you think you're looking at? Adding a reference to her breast.
Did he ever find her? And because as Jews know, you can't just offer a generalized apology. He has to find sugar tits herself and apologize for calling her. That thing that he called her. Anyway,
that
Mel.
That you just called her.
That I just called her. I didn't call her. I was ventriloquizing Mel Gibson. Yeah. Anyway, Mel, you are the gift that keeps on giving.
I've heard people say, you know, I am a angry drunk. Fill in the blank. I am a...
happy drunk until I snap for no reason.
Somebody said, I do not believe tequila can turn an unbiased person into a raging anti-Semite.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, they don't know what they're talking about. That's as simple as that is.
Upcoming live shows, November 17th, Beth Zedek in Toronto. We've booked some amazing guests for there, including the wonderful novelist David Besmosges. And February 10th, we will be at Temple Israel in West Palm Beach, Florida. Speaking of Florida... who's it time to call?
It's time to call Grandpa Al.
It's time to call Grandpa Al.
And it's lucky because he actually has a landline.
Before we call Grandpa Al, I just want to say that he is apparently an amazing guy, right? He's a competitive chess player. He is a Boca resident. He is the maternal grandfather of Stephanie Butnick. He spent a career in banking before retiring to, why'd he go to Florida? The golf links, the weather, the...
They were doing like... Westchester, they were in Heritage Hills for a while, and then they were doing half and half, and then they just went back.
They just went all the way. And they are proud, lifelong Democrats who are now surrounded by some Jews who are not going to vote today.
He is
in
the heart of darkness. He's as far up the river of Trumpkins and Boca as you could go.
And according to the notes I was given, Stephanie, he was very disappointed in you when you dated a Republican in college.
Yep.
Who was that Republican, Stephanie?
I don't want to name him, but he's like definitely going to be president one day.
Ugh. You can't stop that?
No. When our parents met, it was like the birdcage.
When he's president, will you think I could have been first lady? It did
sure.
not get that serious.
I could have been like, had like a Jackie O thing.
You would have made a very good Jewy O, I want to say. No? That would be a really good vibe for you.
All right. Shall we get,
goals.
See that.
Shall we get Grandpa Al on the line? Okay. Hello?
Hello?
Al?
Yes.
Hi, Al. This is Mark Oppenheimer from the Unorthodox Podcast. How are you?
Mark, I'm fine. I enjoy the podcast.
That means a great deal to us. And I'm here with Liel, whom you will know.
Hello, sir.
Yeah.
And
yes.
Also with your favorite granddaughter, Stephanie.
Hi, Grandpa.
Hi, Steph. Hi.
She is your favorite granddaughter, right?
This must be wonderful for you. You get a chance to talk to a stereotypical Boca resident grandfather.
Well, that's really what we want to get at here today is how stereotypical are you? Because we understand that you are a proud lifelong Democrat. And we've also heard that there are some in Boca, the famously Jewish community of Boca, who are not voting Democrat this year. And I think our main question for you is, what's it like there? How many Trumpkins? How many Hillary voters? And is everyone getting along?
Well, let me answer the last one first. No, everybody's not getting along because in general, as the election process has gone on, there's no conversation between the two sides. The Trump people, and I'm talking about the circle that I move in, generally older people, older Jewish people, but the Trump supporters out of that group are just vicious about it.
What do they say? What's the rationale?
The rationale is it's a holdover from the fact they never really accepted Obama, and they didn't accept Obama because he was black. And to the extent that Clinton has tried to incorporate the Obama legacy, those people are furious about this.
So what's the craziest conversation you've had, Grandpa?
Well, let me tell you, the craziest conversation was, this is really interesting. I went to my doctor yesterday. Now, my doctor is in his 40s, religious Jew. And we just started to chat about this, about the election, and he told me he's going to vote for Trump. And I said, you know, why would you do that? He said, well, I don't think there's much to choose between them. And basically, the country needs a change. I guess, you know, he's like a small business owner that you've been hearing about who resents the fact that there's all this regulation, resents the taxation, resents the fact that the government doesn't seem to be working for him, and thinks that Trump is going to shake things up. I was absolutely, you know, I couldn't believe what I was hearing.
Is he still your doctor?
He's my doctor.
Did you end any friendships over this? Did you have friends who are no longer your friends because they're Trumpkins?
Let me put it this way. I think a lot of friendships have been put on ice.
So I have this impression, Al, and this comes partly from my family, so this is my perspective, that Jews are sort of reliable liberals, right? That they would want, you know, they like the idea of a black president, and they like the idea of a woman president, and they think that, you know, a social safety net is a good thing. Am I just living in the past? I mean, the people you're talking to, are they just all about low taxes and me, me, me? Am I just crazy to have this sense of Jewish superiority, Jewish liberal superiority?
Yes. Yes. Now, you have to understand, you know, that's who I am. I have never voted for a Republican for president, and I voted for Adlai Stevenson twice.
In two different elections, to be clear.
Yes. Yes. That ought to be clear. Yeah, I voted for him in two different elections. And the fact of the matter is that in spite of what my wife had to say, I actually voted for Bernie Sanders in the primary.
Hi, Grandma.
And, you know, you're right. There is a liberal tradition in my generation that has seemed to disappear. I thought it was wonderful that I could vote for a black president, and that it'd be wonderful that in my lifetime I would also be able to vote for a woman to be president. But, you know, wealthy Jews living in Boca Raton, you know, they don't have that tradition. Somehow or other, that's gone.
Grandpa, I have a question for you.
The
people in your generation have actually, like, seen bad stuff, you know, like this whole idea of, like, make America great again. They've actually seen, like, you know, bad leaders, things like that. Is there any sense of perspective? Like, if you served in World War II, like, how can you vote for Trump? Like, how do people reconcile their life experiences and having been around for some of the more challenging historical things with voting for someone who has, like, such fascist undertones?
You know what the reason for that is? People, because they have been in one way or another comfortable for the last 20 or 30 years, when presented with choices, it's what's in it for me, okay? And so that liberal tradition is not widespread anymore. It's just not there. And the reason is, I mean, the idea, you know, make America great again. I don't think if you're black, you want to make America what it was in 1960. I don't understand that. But if you're worried about your income and your investments, and the government doesn't seem to be responsive, then you say, I want to change. And they don't. I don't believe that. I think Trump really put his finger on it when he said he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and not lose a supporter. That's absolutely true.
Grandpa Al, I have a final question for you. Why is Stephanie your favorite granddaughter?
Well, you've got to know the answer to that. Stephanie is very bright. But more than bright, if you listen to her, you find out things that you just never thought about. And she that's why she's my favorite. Don't tell my other grandchildren. They'll go nuts.
We'll keep it entirely secret.
Grandpa, our favorite, too.
Grandpa, thank you so much for doing this.
Hey, thank you, guys. I love your podcast. I resent being stereotyped. But I think I can get over it.
All right, Grandpa. I'll see you at Thanksgiving.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, love.
Oh, get it. I just have to say that makes me miss my grandpa.
He's the freaking man.
I miss Grandpa Walter so much. Walter was... Okay. Sorry. Let's call Bob Woodward.
Grandpa, tell me about the good old days. Sometimes it feels like this world's gone crazy.
Our Gentile of the Week is probably the first Gentile of the Week we've ever had who's been portrayed by Gentile Robert Redford in the movies. Bob Woodward, author of All the President's Men and longtime assistant managing editor at The Washington Post. He joins us from a subterranean parking garage in the middle of the night outside Washington. We're doing a little election episode, and so we thought you've been around politics for a couple years now. First of all, do you have any predictions for what's going to happen?
I've been around the country a good deal in the last couple of months, and if you ask how many people trust the polls, almost no one raises their hand. Very suspicious of the polls, and I think with good reason. I think that what happens in the polling is somebody goes out and pours garbage on one of the candidates, or they pour the garbage on themselves, which happens many times. And then the pollsters come around. The essential question is, do you smell anything? And so you're measuring the news of the day or the week. So a prediction is... not worth a whole lot, I don't think. But if you, again, put all of this together anecdotally, I think either of them can win. I think Hillary Clinton most likely will win. Maybe there's an 80% chance she will, but that means there's a 20% chance she won't. So,
like the Cubs might win the World Series or something.
Yes, exactly. Being from Chicago as a kid, I think I was a Cub fan 65 years ago, and I have been waiting. So it was a significant turning point in my life to see the Cubs and know my father, who's deceased, who was an ardent Cub fan. He'd go out and work in the yard with a little transistor radio listening to their games.
Well, then, first of all, mazel tov to you and
yeah,
that.
Big
but,
week.
You know, speaking of mistrust, watching this, you know, momentous campaign unfold, were there ever moments where you kind of miss Nixon? I'm asking only half in jest, by the way.
No. Nixon has been the gift that keeps giving, of course. But I don't... This is not Nixonian. It's got some dimensions, but the criminality of Nixon, which we now know from thousands of hours of tapes and documents and memoirs and testimony, is not matched by anyone. I think there's deceit, dishonesty, corruption on the part of both candidates, frankly, and but I don't think it's in the ballpark in terms of what Nixon did that we could prove.
So you've obviously seen it all, and you know, covered it, been instrumental in bringing that to light. Are there echoes? I mean, this seems to be like this awful thing happening. Do you feel that same sense of, I don't know, apocalypse that some of us are feeling?
No, I think that's, I think it's real. I think we tend to amplify it in the media, but I think there are a lot of what I call Valium voters out there, people who are hysterical and really upset, and then after the election, somebody's going to win, and people will calm down and go about their business, even if Trump wins. But if Trump wins, you have so many more unknowns, and it could be, at least in the short term, maybe even the long term, a total jolt to the political system in Washington and maybe to the economy and foreign affairs.
Well, that actually goes to a question I've been wondering about. You know Washington very well. When most presidents come in, they draw their staff from this kind of pool of bureaucrats and appointees who have cycled in and out of various government offices and private industry. But there's a kind of Washington community of people whom you can put at various cabinet departments and administrative agencies. What happens if Trump goes in and he doesn't have any of those ties? And what's more, he's like burned. He's like completely trashed many of the connections that would help him staff up. Do we end up with just like the people from Breitbart News running Treasury? I mean, where does he get his people from?
Well, that's a really good question. And if he were to win, again, I think it's unlikely, but possible. I suspect he might. And when we interviewed him, Bob Costa, reporter at the Post, and I interviewed Trump 6 months ago, we spent a lot of time quizzing him on the issue of all successful politics is consensus building, bringing people in. And he kept saying, oh, yeah, you know, someday I'll get there, but I'm not there yet. But so I suspect if he looked around after winning the presidency, should that happen, he's going to be somewhat like the character Robert Redford in the movie The Candidate. After winning, kind of looks a little stunned and says, "What do we do now?"
That's not my favorite Robert Redford character, I have to
say. we have some other Robert Redford characters we like better. But when you were sitting with Trump interviewing him, did you get a sense that there was a there? I mean, was there a person capable of answering that question? Is there more than we see in these awful rallies and the shouting and the tweeting?
Well, if you look at the transcript, which is on the Post website,
right.
You know, it's, I mean, there is a there, but he, for instance, said, he said with pride, "I bring out rage in people." Now,
yeah.
And then he said, he's not sure that's a good thing or a bad thing, but, you know, it's a bad thing. If you're president, you've got to bring people together. Again, this consensus building. Which he has never been a strong advocate for, obviously, as a candidate. At the moment of election, I suspect with those disaffected Republicans, were he to call on them, some of them might assist or actually come running. But, you know, that's very hypothetical. And you're quite right with Hillary Clinton. It's a group of people who previous office holders and to a certain extent has been. Of course, the Trump movement is all designed to work against that. We don't want that establishment. We don't want the has-beens. We want new people, new faces, new ideas, but you can't, I used to be in the Navy in the 60s, they always said with a big aircraft carrier, you're going ahead at a certain speed. You can't turn it around without great effort and lots of time. Certainly the federal government is like a giant aircraft carrier, and turning it around or even changing the course several degrees, as previous presidents have found, is very difficult.
I have a very important question for you. So recently we've been hearing about, you know, Bridgegate, Emailgate, all these, you know, Wienergate. Do you ever feel as like, you know, part of the originator of, you know, the original gate? Do you feel like we're just like using this term and you can't stand it? Like the sanctity of gate has just been lost?
Well, it has. It was lost a long time ago. William Safire, a New York Times columnist, I think, coined the putting gate on the end of things. And he had been a Nixon speechwriter. And I think initially it was designed to lower the bar on what a real scandal was.
You know, the Republican narrative, the Republicans have been very good in this election at creating a consensus for many people that Hillary is corrupt. Jill Abramson, whom you and I both know, former editor of The Times, she's written in The Guardian that actually there's no there, that this is someone who's been investigated to the ends of the earth by multiple commissions, Whitewater and other hearings, and that actually Hillary is relatively honest when it comes down to it, that they would have found about 20 smoking guns if there were any out there. What is your sense of how corrupt or not Hillary Clinton is?
Well, just because somebody's not indicted or convicted doesn't mean there isn't corruption there. Bill Clinton, in the speech he gave, very strong speech for his wife at the National Democratic Convention, said there's the real Hillary and then there's the cartoon. And he essentially said all the criticism is a cartoon. If you look at it neutrally, and I try to, some of it is a cartoon, but a lot of it's not. All of the business that come out about the foundation, the emails, the speaking fees, the obsession to make money, raises all kinds of questions, whether they're legal or not. We maybe see, maybe we will never see, but this is not a concoction, and it's not necessarily criminal. It's and some of it is unfair, but I've said this before. I've known Hillary Clinton since she was first lady. She's really smart. She's a dynamo, and she's become more hidden and secretive. I think that's a mistake. I think people can sense that.
Hey, Bob, thank you so much. This has been really, really helpful. And have you voted yet?
No, I don't vote. I used to take my daughters into the voting booth and let them vote for me, but they're away at college or out of town. And so I won't vote for president. It's already decided in the District of Columbia.
Wait, so when they were underage, you would take them in and just let them pick somebody?
Yeah, they let you do that in the voting booth. It's citizenship training for children.
Well, thank you so much for your time. This has been enormously enlightening, and I will see you around New Haven.
Thank you.
All right, take care, Bob.
Thank you.
Bye.
If you're gonna do it right. Here are my notes. If you're gonna hype it with the facts.
Woodward, Bernstein, you're both on the story. Now don't fuck it up.
Next up on special unorthodox election coverage 2016, 5777, tablet correspondent and man about Washington and Daily Beast columnist and provocateur, James Kerchick. Jamie, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Mark.
Have you been on Russia Today again lately?
No, not in 3 years.
Could you just
years.
Give the 1 minute version of what happened to you on Russia Today? That was a great moment of...
Let me do it so Jamie doesn't have to miss
it. A great moment of Jamie, civic theater
widens Jamie's intro. Jamie's a hero, and really, especially in this, election season, Jamie speaks truth. And
you're
Jamie
not answering
went on,
the question
on
at
Russia
all.
Today,
to Russia.
I'm not paying him.
Okay. And Jamie let the wonderful people of the Kremlin-run propaganda news television station know precisely what he feels about the fact that they are, lousy Putin apologists by talking, for example, about gay rights and their non-existent stature in Russia.
There was a costume change.
There was a costume change, and you should all
did you like
you
rip open
Google
your
that.
Shirt? In my memory, you
suspenders.
Ripped open your shirt to reveal rainbow
they were,
pasties.
They
or
were
something.
Hanging. No. Rainbow suspenders were hanging from my waist, and I pulled them up. Yeah.
So, Jamie, this has been a really freaking awful electoral season, and you've been really, really good at keeping the moral flame high as it should be. Here's kind of my first question. Who are the worst people of this election season? Because I feel we've had a lot of really horrible fucking human beings.
If you had
to pick like 5 or 10 who we really need to kind of, come to terms with, and I don't want to say punish, but, bring to justice, if you will.
Well, I did an article for the Daily Beast 2 weeks ago.
Part of why I'm asking.
And it was a list of 25 unforgivable people. Mm-hmm. And actually, number one, who's in the news now again today, was Chris Christie.
The worst.
Right, like as we sit here, we just found out his aides were convicted moments ago.
Yes, yeah. For Bridgegate. And I put him
Bridgegate. Gate.
I put him at the top because he was really seemed to be the first establishment Republican who endorsed Trump. And he kind of opened the door, I think, to a lot of other, rational, serious people
opened the
supporting
lane,
him.
As it were.
Opened the lane, yes. And I remember where I was when Chris Christie endorsed.
He handed out easy passes.
Yes, very much so. So he's at the top. I put Gingrich at the top. I just think he's a fat pig and just a disgusting human being.
There's no need to go after his... there's no need to go after his weight. I hate Gingrich at least as much as you, but anticipating...
As a fat pig American,
I'm going to bring it up. You know why?
Okay.
Because he defended Trump when Trump went after the Miss Universe for being Miss Piggy.
Piggy.
That's
right.
And then Newt Gingrich, this fat pig, came out and said that he was right to do so.
Because it was her job.
So can I just...
Newt is a fat pig.
Can I scratch my own Newt Gingrich for a moment?
Wow.
Which is that... gloves are off, okay? Which is that Gingrich, one of the things in my... religion reporting history is I'm very interested in annulments from the Catholic Church and how easy they are to get. You and I, Jamie, are from Massachusetts, where if you're a Kennedy, they pre-issue you some annulments in case you might need them down the marital road. And Gingrich is now a Roman Catholic, but it's unclear that he ever got his first marriage annulled. annulled. I think he got the second one annulled, but and is now married to the third, the mistress.
Callista.
Right, who was the mistress, right?
I think it worked in his office.
And worked in his office. And but if the Catholic Church says that any previous marriage to any other Christian, even if you weren't Catholics at the time, is a real marriage that has to get annulled. So his first marriage, I think he was a Southern Baptist marrying his Southern Baptist high school sweetheart.
I'm sorry, by the way, had it been a Jew, is it completely kosher? If you married
then
a Jew,
the marriage, yeah. I think, it didn't
doesn't count.
You don't need it at all. Right. Didn't count. Right. It's between
so
two.
Are you saying that
Christians.
Newt Gingrich is a chained woman?
He's an aguna and a bigamist, is what I'm saying. That's exactly. He's
an aguna. Take this up with Pope Francis.
So I have, like, at various points in the last election cycle, I peppered his PR people with questions saying, did he ever get the first marriage annulled? Because if not, then according to the Catholic Church, he's a bigamist. They never answer. And I just think, I mean, he's one of those people like Bill Bennett, who you know all along, they're
horrible.
Virtue peddlers who have no virtue.
Horrible. Bennett's totally up
just
there.
Just total opportunists, right? Yeah. And it's like, why are so many, you know more right-wing douchebags than I do. Why are so many right-wing douchebags on their fourth marriage or third or fourth marriage? Yeah. How does it not register?
Like high moral horse.
Yeah, like how does it not register internally within the community that
Mark,
they're bad apologists for virtue?
Fascinating as this conversation is, Jamie has like a list of 25 assholes to get through.
Okay.
He's only done two.
We got to Gingrich.
Where's Rudy Giuliani on this?
Rudy was, yeah, and he was a real disappointment.
The newly
for me
bald
personally.
And teeth capped yeah. Rudy Giuliani.
Because I liked Rudy Giuliani, and he was my kind of Republican, you know, socially moderate, tough on terrorism, good mayor.
Dresses up well in a dress.
Yeah, did drag. And then just to see him, I was at the convention, and he gave the most, I mean, insane, orgasmic, like bizarre rambling speech.
You kind of made a larger argument, right? This is a specific kind of psychological profile. Mm. Forget, you know, being in camp Trump, but who actually supports and is excited about it. What's that person like?
I think it's an authoritarian personality. It's and with Trump, I mean, if you want to look at Trump in the particular, it's racism. I mean, I just can't escape that. I think this is largely a white supremacist movement. I think it's 90% that. I think it's all based on racial resentment.
What does it leave us quasi-normal conservatives who just want, you know, the principled value of the movement that's now been torn to shreds by Cheeto Benito?
I mean, that's a great question. I think you have to fight for the party.
As a Big Ten Democrat, we'll have you back.
Yeah, I mean, I've happily endorsed Hillary Clinton. I'm not going to be happy with her as president probably, but I mean, there's no question. But yeah, no, I mean, what I'm worried about is that now the Republican Party might become sort of like a European ethno-nationalist style, you know, folkish party, like the
but
National
but that
Front.
Works. But they have power in a parliamentary system, a folkish party. In a two-party system, that party really loses badly in most places.
Yeah,
I mean,
one would hope
they keep Alabama.
Right,
but
That's that's the silver lining, I guess, is that this does not have a future. This sort of politics, but it does have a kind of a rump.
Yeah.
35% of the country that will support it, which is horrifying
the
when you think about
rump,
it.
Rump, if you will.
So what's the worst thing you've been called on Twitter this election cycle?
Oh, God. Yesterday, I got a lot of sodomites and catamites. It's like, tell me something I don't know.
What is it? A catamite is after children? Sodomite is after
I think a catamite is... No, I think a catamite is a...
A bottom?
If you want to say that. It's sort of a in the court of... Say a gay king.
Have you gotten
the Jewish
flavor?
Little catamites running around.
I'm a catamite. Yeah.
Has it taken on a Jewish flavor?
Oh, of course. I mean, yeah, I've had the Photoshop of my face in the gas chamber multiple times.
I never got that.
Yeah, Leon really wants that.
Did
you guys see what someone tweeted? Tablet tweeted our last episode and at Jeff Jacoby and at Jeremy Hobson, and someone wrote back to the three of them with like.
The woman yelling at the Jews.
Yes. Schindler's List. Yeah. Goodbye, Jews.
Goodbye. Was that from Schindler's List? Was it a screen grab from Schindler's List?
There's a whole...
it was like a GIF.
Yeah. Someone GIFed
Goodbye,
Schindler's
List.
Is that what that was?
But that was the... I mean, and that's like our guests. That's like not... Do it to us, I feel like.
Yeah, don't go after our guests. Don't go after Jeff Jacoby.
Well, this is... I've been amazed by the Jewish Trump supporters. It's incredible. Because, I mean, I have... I'm just going to come out and say this. I mean, I think Trump is making America dangerous for Jews. He is making this country dangerous for Jews. His movement is a threat to Jewish lives. Jewish lives matter, and Trump is threatening them. And any Jew who is supporting this movement
heard it here first,
is a Shonda and should be. I'm dead serious.
I agree.
It is repulsive, and these Jews have absolutely no excuse.
Who broke your heart the most this season? Was there any one person where you thought, fuck, I really expected better?
No, I don't want to say it because they're like personal.
Publicly, is there one person who you looked at and be like, ah, man?
I mean, Marco Rubio, I guess. I was saddened by that. I liked him in the primary, and I thought he had a real future. But this is the guy who said Trump can't be trusted with the nuclear codes, and then he endorses him for president. I mean, how could I ever trust
behaving,
Marco Rubio?
If you will, like little Marco.
Like he is. Like, this is the thing about Trump. He's actually right about these people that he ridiculed during.
He actually saw into them.
Yeah, he is little Marco. Right. He is Lion Ted. Okay? Like, it's true. He's revealed. They're a bunch of frauds.
Okay, so have you, like my Grandpa Al, had to put friendships on ice?
It's kind of like an unspoken.
It's like a Chelsea Clinton Ivanka thing.
Yeah, we say don't talk.
We'll talk at the end of the election.
It's like, really, it's like passive aggressive, and it's like, you know how I feel. I know how you feel.
What about
let's avoid this.
You're someone, Jamie, and I've known you for a long time. Who I think you used to identify as more on the left than you are now.
I was a Nader supporter.
You were a Nader supporter.
When I was 18. When you were 18. It was a youthful indiscretion.
Okay, so how do you handle the people who take glee in seeing you're falling out with many conservatives now and probably give you some I told you so's, like, oh, are you coming back to the left? Like,
I haven't gotten that, actually.
You haven't?
What actually I've gotten is a lot of people on the left who really hate Hillary Clinton point to my supporting her as being, well, this is the evidence that she is a neoliberal neocon warmonger.
I see.
It's like you can't
And I've
win.
Kind of reveled in that,
No
actually.
Matter what you
I'm
do.
Like, yeah, you know what? Like, all these emails that have come out and her speeches at Goldman Sachs where she's, like, talking about the free market and opposing the Iran deal and whatnot. I'm like, yeah, this is great. Like, this is, we told
That's
you.
That's really, so it's like the far left anti-Hillary folk.
Yes.
You're yeah, like, yeah. Look, Hillary and Jamie Kirchick
yeah.
in the neocon.
In bed together.
In
exactly.
bed together.
And I'm like, you know it.
And you're like.
I'm with her.
I'm with her, bitches.
Hey, should we get, since you know Eliana, should we call her up now? And we
sure.
can have,
yeah. Sure.
Let's call your old friend Eliana Johnson, who is Washington editor of National Review and a keen observer of the political scene. I think we have her on the line. Eliana?
I'm here.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Great. So we've been talking with Jamie about the Republicans who have most broken our heart with their Trump support. I actually should be frank. Like, are you one of the Republicans who's breaking our heart with your Trump support, or are you with her?
I'm actually not planning not to vote atop the presidential ticket. So. I don't know how that will end with you guys, but that's what I am planning to go vote early tomorrow, and maybe I'll write somebody in.
Is that like a journalist thing? Is that a political thing, moral thing? Where does that come from?
I think I would vote and have voted in previous years for president, so it's not out of a feeling of like journalistic integrity, but I just don't care for either of the candidates.
So whom are you rooting for to win, though? Like, if you had to pick, if you were playing God?
I guess on the margins, I would maybe prefer her, but
phew.
I think they're both pretty terrible.
So what's the mood around National Review, right? This is William F. Buckley's magazine. This is the organ that kind of really created movement conservatism by bringing together sort of religious traditionalism and free market economics with a little soupçon of sympathy for Franco. And so, like, what, you know, are there, what's the ratio of like Trumpkins to non-Trumpkins in the swank offices?
Oh, the offices are extremely swank. You should come by for a tour.
Everything in publishing is. I know.
Oh,
how it
yes.
Is. Yeah.
Yes. The mood is, I think, pretty despondent. And I actually don't know who's voting which way. I would have to guess that most people are just not voting at top of the ticket. And they're writing in, I would guess most people are writing in a candidate.
Zombie Reagan.
What has surprised and or disappointed you most this election season, besides the candidates?
Well, the one thing that I think is most notable is that I do think we're seeing a political realignment underway, in that I think the Democrats are consolidating their position as the party of elites. They will, for the first time in a long time, win college-educated, white-collar voters. Mitt Romney won those voters by a large margin in 2012. And Republicans are becoming the party of the working class. I think you can see that most visibly in Ohio, where four unions have endorsed Rob Portman. And I do think that union support, that blue-collar, white working-class support, is becoming less and less important to Democrats. And I think increasingly we'll see union workers voting for the Republican Party. And the Democrats are becoming really the party of elites and multiculturalists.
So, I mean, from someone who comes from a labor family, my dad recently retired from the labor movement, in a very empirical way, that is insane. Because if all you wanted, if you care about your union, if you're a union person, the thing that matters most in your life for your union is who gets appointed to the National Labor Relations Board. And Democrats, even the more conservative Democrats, appoint people who make it easier to certify unions and make it easier for unions to win arbitrations. And Republicans are exceedingly hostile. Like, they appoint people who basically, you know, supervise the union board to get rid of unions. It's like appointing anti-environmentalists.
It's so cute that you think so, still think that, like, logic matters.
Right, so I guess
Well, I was going to say, I think if you ask your average union member,
well, that's what I was getting to,
Erie, Pennsylvania, yeah, or in, you know, coal country in Ohio, what's the most important issue to you, a lot of them would talk about trade. And the Democratic Party now is more pro-trade than the Republican Party. You know, I wrote something about there was a huge poll done by a Republican-leaning data analytics firm of sample size was 7,000 people, so it was enormous. And it showed the more Republican a voter identifies as right now, the more anti-trade that voter is. There's just been a huge sea change on some of the issues that used to be, for free marketeers, incredibly important, like free trade. So I do think there's going to be sort of a redefinition of what it means to be a Republican and what it means to be a Democrat in the wake of this election.
So it's basically going to be protectionist versus non-protectionist.
Yeah, I at least think that the Republican Party or Republicans will moderate their position on trade, or that trade will cease to be a political issue, or an issue that's defined by the parties. It may be more of a regional issue. I'm not quite sure.
It'll be those of us who hate the Mexicans, Jews, gays, and blacks, and those of us who don't.
What's the issue that you've found to be of real interest and impact to voters that, like, were not, that the media really isn't keen on and isn't really covering?
That's an interesting question. I think the Senate races and the people who are running successfully down ballot are running incredibly localized races. So they're not talking about the, you know, larger national issues. But, like, Rob Portman in Ohio is running on these things I've never heard of, like some kind of, toxin that's in Lake Erie. They've sort of insulated their races from the national trends by running very specifically on issues that matter to these local communities. So when I popped into the various states, I've been in Wisconsin, in Nevada, in Ohio, I always learn about some local issue like, the fish in Lake Erie that I had no idea about. And I think that's been, in general, underappreciated by the national press.
So what are you going to be doing on election night?
I'm going to be in Philadelphia, or in the Philadelphia area, with Pat Toomey, who's been he was a strong Senate candidate in a very purple state, running against a relatively weak candidate in Katie McGinty. And I wanted to be with him in that campaign because I thought it was a good vantage point to write about how the Senate shakes out, which I think is probably more interesting and more important than looking at how the presidential race is going to shake out, which I think, even though the media is kind of acting like the race is tightening a whole bunch, I do think it's likely that Hillary Clinton will win.
Just before we go, I was wondering if you could all just go around and say what we'll be drinking tonight.
Yeah, that was my real question. When will you start drinking that?
Not when, but what? I think a particular...
Oh my God!
Strategy.
I want, like, frozen margaritas in every flavor.
In every flavor.
I think I'll be drinking, like, a lot of red wine.
Jamie,
I have to go on the BBC at 4:30 in the morning on election day, so I think I'm gonna have a Pimm's cup.
Nice,
very nice,
nice. Well, it's all oxycodone for me right now with a broken finger. My orthopedist gave me a really generous prescription, and I don't mix that with alcohol. So
I'm going to do gin.
Gin.
Because whiskey kind of makes you, like, nice and mellow.
Yeah, gin's going to make you angry.
Gin gets things weird.
Well, I grew up learning that Jews didn't drink hard liquor. That's obviously wrong.
This has been a subject of much discussion on the North.
Right.
We will have you back at some point. But before we go, though, Eliana, as a Jewess with a very Gentile name, do you ever, like, can you pass? Like, are you ever sort of hanging out with the Trumpkins at their rally and they're like, oh, Ms. Johnson, you know who we really hate? The Jews. Like, are there moments like that for you?
Well, I will say my middle name is Yale, but it's spelled Y-A-E-L, like Yael. And so I was on a Fox News program a while back, and there were all these people tweeting at you know, the Trump people were tweeting at each other, tipping each other off that my middle name was Jewish, and zeroing in, they somehow took the footage and zeroed in on my nose. So I've been found out.
You've been outed. Well,
America.
They're geniuses.
They are. You know, it's like the novelist Howard Jacobson said that anti-Semites live in this perfect hell where they know more about Judaism than the Jews. Like, there are all these anti-Semites out there like, Yael, she's from Torah. Like, they are right. So, like, if only your average Jewish American kid knew as
cared,
much about Judaism.
Cared as much about Judaism.
Eliana, thank you for being one of our three Jews of the week.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wasting away again in Margaritaville, searching for my lost sugar salt. Some people claim that there's a woman to blame, but I know it's nobody's fault.
Our producer, Noah Levinson, happened to be outside Philadelphia the other day when Melania Knaus Trump, was giving her speech, urging us to vote for her husband because he will end bullying. And he filed this report from the field.
I didn't really think there would be too much newsworthy stuff going on at the Melania Trump event. I wasn't wrong. It went exactly the way you would expect. The would-be first lady, in one of the campaign's final acts of hypocrisy, announced her intention to address her husband's favorite pastime, cyberbullying, and everything else was pretty much just greatest hits. But one thing caught my attention almost as soon as I arrived.
Okay, I just saw a guy with a yarmulke go in, and I feel like such an idiot because I missed him.
I spent the afternoon trying to find all the yarmulke heads I could spot in the crowd. I was determined to understand something that had baffled me this entire election season, which is, what kind of Jew votes for Trump? Ultimately, I found three Jews. Not a great sample size, but enough for the purposes of my little straw poll. And sure enough, I came upon three really different kinds of people. First was the agreeable Jew.
I agree with that. And so immigrants are good, but they have to be questioned and, what's the word, vetted? I wouldn't ban anybody or any one particular group.
He didn't think Hillary was the devil. He didn't see himself or Trump as any sort of extremist. To him, it was just about common sense.
I don't think Trump, I don't know him, but he's not interested in the Ku Klux Klan. But, you know, you can't help if you have a few supporters here or there.
Then the conspiratorial Jew.
It's the fact that the government is censoring everything we do. I have a list of cases against Obamacare, and there's a guy named Zenographic that actually censors it.
Jeff Cutler. He's an elected official, actually. The tax collector for East Lampeter Township, and he thinks Obamacare makes it legal for the government to enforce a national religion and kill people who don't follow it. He says you can look it up.
Look up three words, tax collector, Obamacare.
And finally, after the event was over, I ran into the Jew I first saw walking in. I spotted him by the tzitzit sticking out from under his coat. The reason I hadn't noticed his yarmulke inside, he'd bought a baseball cap since walking in. You know which kind.
No, Axe. I just bought it here, and I don't think I'll ever wear it again.
And this last guy, he was really different from the first two.
I just bought it here because why not? I'm at it and just having fun.
I call him the reluctant Jew. He stammered and spoke too quickly, and he seemed to almost be apologizing for supporting Trump. Maybe he thought I was judging him. Maybe I was.
Okay. Yeah, the main point I want to get across is I think it's important that Jews understand how immigration is very important to Jewish life and the future of Jewish people in America. Jews always had. America was a very welcoming country. Of course, it's never perfect, but it was a very welcoming country and always has been for Jewish people. That's not,
I thought I might get a kick out of talking to these Jewish Trump supporters. But the whole thing just left me feeling incredibly lonely. They were three really different Jews, their politics informed by very different information. But they all had one thing in common.
Do you know a lot of Jewish people who are supporting the Trump campaign?
It's not so much a topic that's too much discussed in my community.
Do you have family members who are Jewish?
A lot of them don't want to talk about it.
Friends and relatives who support the campaign?
Oh, I haven't talked to my relatives or friends about the campaign because it's such a divisive issue and I don't want to jeopardize friendships and...
I couldn't believe it. I know it's become pretty uncontroversial to say I don't talk politics. But the Jews? Who talk and bicker about everything under the sun? How could they not be talking about this election?
We have to find a better way to talk to each other, to disagree with each other, to respect each other. With your help and God's grace, we'll make America great again.
That was Noah Levinson outside Philadelphia with Melania Trump. So, some Mazel Tovs of the week, Liel?
If you're hearing this and I am still alive, then it's Tuesday. And I, along with some others, have just completed the New York City Marathon. And so my Mazel Tov is to all the 50,000 heroes who ran this town.
Can I add on to that? Because my cousin's actually coming in from Germany to run it. They live outside of Munich. It's Hanyo Weinrib and his son Johannes. And it's always really fun because we always go out. We did a river cruise last time. No, sorry. Last time they were here for the marathon, we did a dinner cruise around the Statue of Liberty. So it's always exciting to see them. And they'll great job.
See, the amazing thing is the finish line and the kind of podium where my family will be sitting by the finish line happens to be right by the giant Israeli flag that is literally like 3 paces away from the end point of this marathon.
You know, I went to track you on the marathon and it says you're an Israeli citizen. Like,
yeah.
That's what it says.
Yeah, so you're running for Israel.
I am running for my country. Running for Israel. For my people.
All right. And my Mazel Tov is to my friend Derek Slapp, who is running for state representative from the district in Connecticut that includes much of West Hartford and a couple surrounding towns.
Weehaw.
How'd you know?
I actually don't know how I knew that.
They call it Weehaw. Anyway, so as of this moment, we don't know if he's going to win or lose, but he's been running a great campaign.
If he loses, it's rigged.
If he loses, it's rigged. Obviously, he's relying on the fact that he's half Jewish to pull in a lot of that vote. Half Jewish and all Unitarian, my friend Derek Slapp. But he's going to be an amazing servant to the people of Connecticut.
Make Weehaw great again.
He is going to make Weehaw great again. So big ups to Derek Slapp. Unorthodox is brought to you by Tablet Magazine, on the web at tabletmag.com. It is edited this week by Noah Levinson and produced by Alyssa Goldstein and Kira Telushkin. Rabbinic supervision was by the Chicago Cubs and kosher slaughtering by James Comey. Follow Tablet on Facebook or on Twitter at Tablet Mag. Our music is by Golem. And we record at that sweet, sweet penthouse in the sky known as Argo Studios in New York City. Shalom, friends.